From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour will be made tonight at 6 p.m. at the Rochester Academy of Medicine for an event called Dine and Rhyme. And the person here today, not only in our studio, but who you can meet tonight at Dine and Rhyme, is one of the major, major names in modern Arabic poetry. His name is Jodat Fakhruddin. He's the author of Lighthouse for the Drowning. Now, that is not his only work, but that's a work that came out in 1996 that really changed the landscape of modern Arabic poetry. And you're going to hear why this hour. He is a guest of BOA. BOA Editions has brought him in for their Dine and Rhyme event, and you've got not only a chance to meet this remarkable author, but also a chance to hear a bilingual poetry reading, a book signing, and a dinner reception as well tonight. Tickets are still available. They're going to be available at the door. We'll tell you about that coming up. But first, let me go ahead and welcome our guests. And the publisher for BOA Editions, who's responsible for bringing Jodat here, is Peter Connors. Peter, welcome to the broadcast.
Thanks for having me.
Also here is Jodat Fakhruddin, the author of Lighthouse for the Drowning. Thank you for being here. My honor to have you, Jodat. Thank you.
Thank you.
And also here is Huda Fakhruddin, who is Jodat's daughter and co-translator. And Huda is an assistant professor of Arabic literature at the University of Pennsylvania. And she's going to be doing some of the translating for us this hour. Huda, it's great to have you as well.
Thank you for having us, Evan.
All right. Before we talk about this remarkable event tonight, just want to remind you that this is the final hours of our fall membership campaign. You've been hearing us all week long, and we interrupt only very briefly to let you know that this is it. This is the final day now of our membership campaign, and we ask you to call 454-6300 with a pledge of support. This is the kind of programming that you don't hear in other places in town, in Western New York, and frankly, very rarely do you hear this kind of conversation in depth with an author like this. And I know you support it and you value it. And if you call 454-6300, you can join the community of people who not only value it, but have become members because of it. Or you can jump online at WXXINews.org, and I hope you will. We're done in about 6 hours, and that's it for our fall membership campaign. Speaking of 6 hours from now, Peter Connors, at 6 to 9 tonight, the Rochester Academy of Medicine, it's Dine and Rhyme, and you know, I only briefly talked about who Jodat is and the impact he's had. We're going to be getting into that all hour long. Why don't you tell me how you put this event together and how it did come together?
Sure. BOA is a poetry publishing house. We also publish some short fiction, but we've been publishing in Rochester for 41 years now. And this particular event, our Dine and Rhyme, is an annual fundraising event that we hold. And we have obviously a poetry reading and a dinner, and it's a lovely get-together for the community. This is the 20th year that we've done it. You know, I should also mention that in BOA's history, we've always published books in translation. And in particular, the past 15 years, we've had a series called the Land and Translation Selection Series that has published 2 books in translation per year. So it's been a big part of BOA's mission. And yet somehow in the 20 years we've done Dine and Rhyme, we've never had an international author be the featured guest at Dine and Rhyme. And this year in particular, it feels very important to get international voices into the mix, and in particular to have Jodat's voice in the mix and Huda's voice in the mix. I think it's something that we all need to hear, and the news, you know, the news of his poetry is something that will enrich everybody's ears who hears it. So we're thrilled to bring him here as the first international author at Dine and Rhyme and to help celebrate our 20th annual Dine and Rhyme.
6 to 9 tonight, and the event's going to feature that bilingual poetry reading, book signing, dinner reception, silent auction, $60 at the door. And if you want tickets now, you got to get them at the door tonight. That's at the Rochester Academy of Medicine on East Avenue. So a great opportunity there. Huda, can I ask you, for starters, to kind of, you and Jodat maybe, to kind of set the scene for our listeners of what was happening in the 1990s as Jodat is writing this work, because it's published in 1996, and my understanding, and please do correct me if I'm wrong, is that he had previous works that might have been decently well-known, but this changed kind of his status, his viewpoint in the Arabic poetry world. Is that right?
Yes, that's at least one of the main reasons why my co-translator and I chose this collection in particular and decided to translate the whole collection as opposed to selections from earlier work or later work. I think, objectively, you know, I'm his daughter, so I have some biases here, but this is a collection that is a counterpoint in his poetic career. And it also showcases a very important dimension, an urgent dimension, in the Arabic modernist movement in poetry, which is an engagement with the Arabic tradition. As you probably noticed, many of these poems are set up as conversations with classical voices, whether pre-Islamic or Abbasid, great voices in Arabic poetry. So here you see a modernist poet engaging, teasing out themes, sentiments, states of mind, and finding not just common grounds, but almost empathy with poets who are writing in the same language but are so very distant from him.
Can I just offer an observation of the poetry? I found myself connecting and finding this poetry very accessible, but that does not mean to diminish it. In fact, what I found was, and I think my interpretation is in a very amateur way, but I find it very accessible, very relatable, beautiful, but I also assume that the more knowledge you have of Arabic tradition, of different cultures, the more you will also understand and see that there are layers to it. Is that also fair?
Yes, of course. That's a very good assessment. And your ability to relate to it, finding it accessible, is the most I could have hoped for as a translator. Poetry is a journey, is a translation, right? Translation is a very good metaphor for poetry, whether we're talking about journeying from a language to another or just in the same language. The experience of reading a poem is a translation. So if you find something accessible in it, it's definitely there. And your knowledge of layers beyond that is also something very thrilling. And I'm glad a poem can achieve that.
Well, and make us want to learn more and want to further explore culture. Huda's going to be doing some translating with Jodat as we go throughout the hour here. But if you could, and perhaps your father, tell us what was happening in Lebanon at the time when he's writing this and how that might have impacted the way he put some of these poems together.
Yes, so, أخبرنا عن لحظة تأليف الكتاب. ماذا كان يحدث في حياتك في لبنان في العالم العربي 1996؟
نعم, هذا الكتاب يضم قصائد كتبتها ما بين العام 1992 والعام 1996. وهو يتكلم على معظم اللحظات المأساوية التي عشناها في بيروت. وطبعا أنت تعرف بأن المرحلة التسعينيات يعني حصل فيها تحولات كثيرة, وكانت مرحلة انعطافات في لبنان, ولذلك يعني في هذه القصائد يمتزج الخاص بما هو عام. هنالك تعبير عن تجارب الخاصة, ولكن هذه التجارب طبعا مرتبطة بالظروف العامة.
So this book, the poems in this book were written between 1992 and 1996, and as you know, this is a very turbulent period in the history of Lebanon right after the civil war, and many of these poems come out of a personal experience, but the backdrop to it are some very tragic moments in the history of Lebanon and the Arab world. So the poems come out of both a private and a public space.
Okay, and is there an example that you can start? I'd like to read a couple as we go throughout the hour, but do you want to choose one, Huda, or do you want, Jodat, would you like to choose one? And he can read in Arabic and you can translate for us.
تختار قصيدة نبدأ فيها.
نعم, سوف أقرأ قصيدة عنوانها حديقة أيلول.
Yes, so the first poem we'll read is the September.
قلت هذه حديقة أيلول, كيف إذن لا أهب خفيفا إلى موجها المتألق بين الغصون, ولا أتبدد في نومها المتراقص. هذه حديقة أيلول, كيف أداري وقوفي أمام ارتجافتها؟ قلت هل ثم شيء يحرك فينا أنا والحديقة ما يشبه الكلمات؟ أينطق هذا الهواء إذا لم ندعه أنا والحديقة ينثرنا كالشتات؟ حديقة أيلول يوم أنظمه كيفما أشتهي, لا أنظمه بل أزول به بينما يضمحل وما يتشكل. أمضي به إلى حيث لا يوم لا وقت بل كل شيء يزول ويترك قولا له في حديقة أيلول لا شيء بل كل شيء يقول.
There, the September garden, why do I not leap light to its bright quivering among the branches? Why do I not perish in its swaying slumber? This, the September garden, how do I stand still against its trembling? What is it that awakens in us, me in the garden, something like words? Would this air speak? Had we, the garden and I, not disintegrated so? September garden is a day I put together as I please. I don't assemble so much as perish in it. Between what fades and what takes form, I abandon myself to the garden. In a place where there is no day, all ceases and nothing is left behind but words. In the garden of September, nothing is, but everything speaks.
He could have chosen any poem. Why did he choose September?
طبعا انا يعني هذه القصيده لها دلالتها وخاصه ان هذا الشهر شهر ايلول له ميزته بين الشهور ولكن اعترف بان هدى هي التي اختارتها.
Well, he said that this is a poem he likes and he likes the state that the month of September puts one in, that transition, but he also confessed that I had chosen it for him before we came. It was one of the poems we agreed to read.
Well, why does it touch you, Huda?
I really like that ending, the few lines that we ended with, the speaking, the words that exist somehow in the silences of things, especially in nature, is something that I find very appealing in this piece.
Oh, absolutely. In this time of year, we're still close enough. It feels like September this week.
It does,
here in Rochester. And the words and the silences, it seems today, these days, we get less and less of that. We fill all of the silences because we sort of fear actually engaging with either nature or emotion or ourselves, it seems.
That's true, yes. Yeah.
So that's just one example. We're talking to a remarkably important figure in the Arabic poetry world, Jodet Fakhreddin, and his daughter Huda is here. Peter Connors is publisher for BOA Editions, and Jodet is in Rochester tonight for an event with BOA Editions, their Dine and Rhyme event from 6 to 9 o'clock tonight at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. We're going to choose more of these as we go throughout the hour, and I would like to ask a little bit about how our guests think that perhaps things have changed, not just on the personal level in life, but also looking at Lebanon. Obviously, this came out on the heels of the civil war, but how much of those themes are still present, and how much of those themes have changed in roughly a generation's time since this book of poetry was released in the 1990s?
So السؤال إنه برأيك كيف تغيرت بعض الموضوعات اللي بيحكي عنها الكتاب من التسعين لهلا؟ هل بعدها مناسبة؟
بعد التسعينات أو بالأحرى من التسعينات إلى الآن حدثت أمور كثيرة. نحن نعيش في منطقة متفجرة بالأحداث، كل يوم يحصل شيء جديد، ولذلك فإن التغيرات كثيرة جدا. لهذا السبب فإن ما حصل يصعب علينا أن نحصيه الآن، ولكن أنا بعد هذا الكتاب، بعد كتاب منارة للغريق، أصدرت أكثر من 4 كتب، وفي هذه الكتب تكلمت عن مواضيع جديدة كليا ولها علاقة بهذه الأحداث الكثيرة التي أتكلم عنها. طبعا هنالك أمور كثيرة حصلت ويصعب أن نتكلم عليها كلها.
He said that Lebanon and the region is a very explosive region. So much happens in such little time. Every day feels like much more than that. So thinking back from 1996, he has published 4 poetry collections that have also tried to hold on or grasp some of what has been going on to somehow make sense of it. So his themes in the subsequent four collections have changed dramatically. But I think your question was, how are these themes still relevant? Mm-hmm. So كيف موضوعات هالكتاب بعد قائمة؟ كيف تطلع عليها هلا لما ترجع تفكر فيها؟
نعم موضوعات هذا الكتاب لا تزال حاضرة وأنا كلما عدت إليه أجد بأنني كأنني أتكلم عن اللحظة. هنالك لحظات تستمر في الزمن والشعر دائما يقبض على اللحظات التي لا تصبح قديمة عبر الزمن وإنما تظل لها دلالاتها في الزمن. أظن بأن هذه القصائد في هذه المجموعة ما زال لها موقعها في وضعنا الراهن.
Whenever he goes back to reading this collection, he feels that it's very relevant and present, and that he still feels and that he's still in these states of mind of this collection. And poetry, he said, is a grasping of moments that never become old, moments that are always present. And this is why he still feels that this book is very urgent to him personally.
Huda, you're at UPenn yourself in Philadelphia, and you said before the hour began that there are some echoes of Beirut in Philadelphia, yes?
Yes, I did say that.
No, it's just curious, especially for many of our listeners who have not been to Lebanon. Why do you see some of the echoes?
Well, I've been in the United States for over 10 years now, and I've lived in small towns and college towns. I've been in Philadelphia for 4 years. And it did feel like a homecoming to me because I grew up in war-torn Beirut, a very broken city, very unexpected city, but also a very warm city and a very contained city. And Philadelphia reminds me a lot of that. It's very small, yet big, depending on your mood that day. And it's not perfect. You know, there are these corners that need a little care. There are these sidewalks that, you know, seem a little dejected sometimes. So I don't know, maybe it's all in my head, but I do feel more at home in Philadelphia than I did anywhere else in the United States.
Are you able to travel back home?
I do. I travel back home very often because my parents are there, mm-hmm. my brothers are there.
And what is it like going home for you?
It's not easy. It's like it's traveling back in time. I mean, this is the thing about leaving home and then carrying it with you and then going back and finding that it's not what you thought it was. It's not what you long for. Reconciling memory and reality is a very difficult thing. But I guess my way of dealing with it is just to keep going back and trying to keep up with the place. As my father just mentioned, it's a place that changes very quickly. So if you are away too long, you miss a lot, and it leaves you behind.
I think the entire Fakhreddin family speaks in poetic thoughts, Peter, don't they?
Peter. It's remarkable, actually. I'm sitting here getting more and more excited for tonight because basically the format of our Dine and Rhyme is going to be Jadat and Huda on stage in conversation and sharing poems. I mean, basically this will go on stage in a really intimate way. So I feel like I'm just watching and listening to poems unfold as I'm sitting here, and I'm getting very excited.
Well, and one thing that I'm struck by is, you know, when you go back to the mid-90s when Jodat was working on Lighthouse for the Drowning, which is, again, a book that you can get tonight, yes, Peter?
Absolutely, yes.
Okay.
And they will be signing copies of it at the event as well.
Trust me, you're going to keep hearing more of the poetry as we go throughout the hour. And when I say accessible, I mean you don't have to have a deep knowledge of Arabic culture or poetry or history to really resonate with some of the themes, because I don't. I mean, it's a big source of ignorance for me, but there's so much beauty here. But this was written at a time where in this country, fair or not, you know, 2001 marked a change in how many Americans view Middle Eastern affairs, culture, people, fairly or not, often unfairly. And I wonder if that has impacted Jodat, his work, his writing at all over the years, and if that is felt at all, if that is starting to change again in any sort of, I mean, unfortunately this year we've seen everything from travel bans to discussions to about immigration, refugees, et cetera. And so I guess where I'll start with this is, Huda, can you and your father tell me about how those issues impact you now, whether it's travel ban, whether it's discussions on immigration, if you feel that personally, if your family or friends feel that, if that has an impact on you?
So, سؤال كيف تتأثر هلأ بمستجدات مثل قرار منع المسلمين أن يجوا أمريكا هذه المشاكل السياسية الأخيرة هل كيف تأثر عليك شخصيا؟
يعني ليس عندي مواقف حادة مما يجري ولا أظن بأن هنالك طرفا معه حق وأن طرفا آخر ليس معه حق ولكن نحن نعيش في عالم يعني تحصل فيه أمور كثيرة ليست صحيحة أو أنه لا يجب أن تحصل ولذلك فأن العنف بمختلف وجوهه يجب أن نكون ضده يجب أن نسعى إلى عالم آمن لا يسوده أي شكل من أشكال التعصب أو العنف أنا في رأيي بأن المشكلة هي في التعصب من هذه الجهة أتت أو من تلك
He said that he doesn't have a He doesn't think that there's one side that's wrong and right, or right, one is wrong and one is right. The problem is bigotry and violence, and on both sides, those have to be dealt with, and we should all hope for a peaceful world where nobody is a victim of any of those things.
How about you, Huda?
This is a perspective of somebody living not in this country.
Okay, well then how about you living in this country?
The recent travel ban has been a very... difficult thing for me to deal with. In my work at the university, many of my students are international students who are affected directly. Many of my colleagues are. And their daily life is affected, the way, how often or if ever they get to see their families or not. So this was a reminder that at some point, certain people in this country are always going to be reminded that they don't belong. And that's something very dangerous to... And very disruptive and could be destructive also. When the first ban was issued, all I could do was talk about it in class, and it was a poetry class. So we read poems from the 7 banned countries. We translated them into English. We organized the poetry reading on campus and invited people to come and listen and see how accessible, as you just said, poems from Somalia are going to be, how a poet in Sudan might be worried about exactly the same thing an undergrad at UPenn might be worried about that morning. I think what we fell back on was trying to uncover this sense of empathy that we all have with people, or our ability to empathize with people who are very, very far away and might seem different. And at that moment, it seemed that poetry was the best tool to do that.
When you say that these are moments that remind some people that they don't belong, I just want to push back and hope that you understand that you do, ultimately. And I want to ask you if you have felt that, if you've at least felt some pushback, some strength from those who celebrate diversity and culture and the wonderful patchwork that we have that we try to stitch together and celebrate. Have you felt some of that?
Yes, of course, of course. My family, we are an immigrant family living in Philadelphia. We found refuge in a community of people who celebrated that we were there, who felt responsible to make us feel better, who felt guilty. And that's an amazing thing when you have a neighbor knock on your door and apologize for a Muslim travel ban. It's very touching. The community in the university also was very supportive, of course. And actually, one of the poems we read is in this collection. It begins with a quotation from a pre-Islamic poet who talks about feeling...
In Lighthouse for the Drowning.
Yes, the poem Land.
Can we read it after the break?
Yes, let's
do that. So let's take our only break of the hour. We'll come back. We'll read the poem that Huda is talking about. And we'll also explore some of the other themes in here. So there's a lot of beauty in this book. It's Lighthouse for the Drowning, a collection of poems by Jodat Fakhruddin, who is our guest for the hour, along with his daughter Huda, who is also a professor of Arabic literature at the University of Pennsylvania, and Peter Connors, publisher for Boa Editions. They've put together this event tonight from 6 to 9 o'clock at the Rochester Academy of Medicine. It's Dine and Rhyme, and tickets at the door only now. So you can't buy tickets in advance if you want to go tonight, but you can show up and get tickets at the door, $60 at the door. That's tonight, starting at 6. Let's get that break. We'll come right back. Coming up in our second hour, the first woman to officially enter the Boston Marathon as a participant, Catherine Switzer, joins us in studio. She entered in 1967. It was controversial, so controversial that one of the race organizers tried to run her off the course. She completed it. She's still running marathons today. And she's in Rochester talking about aging with health. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. I'll read an email from a listener as I welcome Randy Gorman, our news director here. Brennan writes to the program and says, Evan, thank you to the Connections team for bringing a fresh perspective to the airwaves. Too often Americans hear Arabic in relation to violence only. To hear the beauty of the language and learning about the culture and artistic complexity is so refreshing. That is from Brennan. So, nice email to kind of welcome Randy Gorman.
Yes, and what a great intro as we talk about the end of our pledge drive, which is at 5 o'clock, actually 6 o'clock this evening, I should say, but we still have a long ways to go, about $40,000 left. And the email that Evan read is so indicative of the kinds of support we get for the kinds of programming that we try to do here on WXXI and also through NPR. That is to bring you different perspectives, and often in a very measured tone, a tone that gives you a broad range of opinions, not just some of those you're going to see in the sound bites on some of the commercial networks. But again, these are the kinds of issues that people should be discussing in a more contextual way, a more thorough way. And what a really interesting hour that you're running right now, Evan, and listening to this poetry. And talking about a topic that, again, I don't think you'd hear on any other station, certainly in this area and probably many other cities around New York State. So if you can help us out to continue the great program you hear on WXXI and Connections, the news team at WXXI, as well as, of course, all the great shows from NPR, please give us a call at 454-6300, 454-6300. If you're out of the area, 1-800-295-9994, 1-800-295-9994. 9994, or if you're in a real rush and you just want to do this online, a safe, secure way is on your mobile app or at your computer at WXXINews.org. Again, we want to continue and expand on the kinds of great shows you hear with Connections and Evan Dawson. So do what you can right now, and we thank you.
Thank you, Randy Gorman. Okay. Appreciate that. Yeah, I'm going to second Brennan's email where he talked about the beauty of the Arabic language. And I want to ask Huda, before we hear the poem Land, I believe is what we're going to hear next. But Huda is one of two translators for Lighthouse for the Drowning. What we're just hearing your father speak, even if I don't understand the language, there's a beauty and a rhythm to it. And so I'm curious to know, translators in any language to any other language have to make choices on how certain rhythms of the language fall, cadence of sometimes lines, individual words. You want accuracy, but you also want that beauty. How fine is that line from Arabic to English, and how did you go about that?
Well, it was a long journey, definitely. And the best setting for me and my co-translator to find the solution for that challenge was conversation. So these poems, each one of them, was discussed over and over for years, actually. This is a project that was in the works for many years. And my co-translator, who's a poet and a professor of creative writing, Jason Iwin, doesn't speak Arabic or read Arabic. So that was an added challenge, and I think it gave these translations a dimension that was necessary. I had to relate to him my feeling about the poems, what I thought they meant, but also how they made me feel. So these conversations were very necessary. Many of them didn't end up, you don't see them in the translation in the final project, but they were the road to that final translation. And he would take the text and what he understood the text was saying to the very limits, and then I would bring it back somewhere in between. And we were very much aware of the music in the original. So all of these poems are metered. So there's a very pronounced music in them in the original. We tried to recreate that, not necessarily imitate it, but find an equivalent in it in English.
Peter, they did a spectacular job, didn't they?
Oh, it's beautiful. And I, you know, it just reinforces to me how important it is to have poetry and literature and translation in this country, because it just, you can see these universal truths and the large and the small beauties that come across cultures and across languages and connect us all. And I think this is such a fantastic example of that.
Well, can we hear Land?
Yes. Bilal.
هذه قصيدة قصيرة عنوانها بلاد.
A short poem titled بلاد.
كلمات رأيتها تعبر السهل سريعا فيستفيق الفضاء. كلمات تمر بالشجر الواهي مرورا فيعتريه بكاء. كلمات هي البلاد التي ضاعت ونحن الفلول والأشلاء. يا بلادا أمست بنا مقفرات وغدونا فما هناك نجاء. يا بلادا نقولها ونسميها فتبكي الأقوال والأسماء. يا بلادا تدوخ في الزمن الرخوي وتودي بسمعها الأصداء. كيف أضحى الزمان فينا قليلا تزدرين ظلاله الصفراء. ليس إلا الذهول في كل صوب وإذا سرت فالدروب رياء. كلمات نقيم فيها إذا عز مقام وأطبقت أرجاء. كلمات هي الديار هي الأرض لنا والسماء والأشياء.
So land. The poem begins with a line from a pre-Islamic poem where the poet Al-Harith bin Halizah says, لا يقيم العزيز في البلد السهل ولا ينفع الذليل النجاء. The noble man does not alight upon an easy land, and flight will not avail the lowly. Speaking of travel bans, so we're staying here, right? Nobody's going. Mm. We're going to stay and fight. These words, I saw them quickly cross the field and the space awakened. Words, when they pass the frail trees, the trees become heavy with tears. Words, they are the lost homeland and we the rubble and remains. Homeland has become desolate with us. We set out before light, but found no way. Homeland, we speak it and we name it, and the words and names weep. Homeland spins in a limp age, deafened by echoes. How did time become so small? Its yellow shadows despise us. There's nothing but astonishment in every direction. And if you walk, the roads deceive. Words we live in when there's nowhere to settle and the directions themselves close down. Words, they are home, the land and the sky to us and everything between.
That's Land from Lighthouse for the Drawing. For the Drowning. And let me ask Joe Dutt to tell us a little bit more. I'm always a little hesitant to ask a poet, what should I get out of that? Because people receive things differently. But to the extent that he's willing to share what he hopes the reader to take from that, I would be curious to know.
شو برأيك لازم يفهم القارئ من هالقصيدة؟ مع أنه عارف أنه السؤال في مشكلة.
لا يعني ما يمكن أن يفهمه القارئ من هذه القصيدة واضح. أظن أنه سهل. تتكلم هذه القصيدة عن ضياع البلاد التي نعيش فيها. نحن أضعنا هذه البلاد وهي أضاعتنا، بمعنى أن العلاقة بيننا وبين هذه البلاد أصبحت واهية وضعيفة وليست كالعلاقة التي يجب أن تكون بين البلاد وساكنيها. هذه هي الرسالة، ومن خلالها يمكن أن يكون هنالك سؤال آخر، ماذا يجب أن نعمل لكي تعود تلك العلاقة؟
He doesn't mind the question because he thinks that this poem is clear in its in some of its messages. It's a mourning of a lost homeland mm-hmm. on many levels. It's a mourning of a loss of connection with home. We have lost home and home has lost us, and there's a sense of responsibility. What have we done for that to happen, and what can we do to fix it? There's this urgent question, and what can be done now? That was his answer. And I think words are probably my answer to that. Finding that refuge in poetry, in words, might be the first step in rebuilding a sense of home.
Amazing. When it comes to the email that I read from the listener, who this is a listener saying, too often in this country, we don't get the beauty in the art and the words, and that when we hear Arabic, there's connotations of, you know, it's what's what happens in mm-hmm. the media, unfortunately, in the media culture. Do you think some fear across cultures comes from a lack of familiarity, just from a lack of contact and exposure and dialogue? Does fear come from a lack of, I guess, familiarity, right?
Exactly, definitely. Fear comes from a lack of contact and exposure and lack of familiarity, but also maybe an insistence on familiarity. I mean, not everything has to be familiar. Things can be unfamiliar and safe, unfamiliar and inviting. Why do we have to see ourselves in everything else? That is a boring way of looking at the world.
This is a really great answer. This is it really is, because what Huda is saying is, it's almost like human beings, if we're not familiar, then we inherently must fear. We don't have to fear if we are not familiar.
We don't, and poetry is the best teacher of that. A poem that's familiar is not necessarily a good poem. A poem that terrifies you is a brilliant poem, right? If it tells you something you never thought you would be told, then that's a very successful poem. Fear can be a positive thing. It could lead to good things if you don't surrender to it and you don't put up a wall, right?
Figuratively or literally.
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want to give us a homework assignment, by the way? What's a poem that does inspire that kind of almost conversion of thought or challenge within somebody? You know, you're a professor. You want to give us an assignment?
That is a challenge. Well, it doesn't have to be about the theme, though. It could be just the way it lands in your ear. Mm-hmm. Let me think. Well, recently I've been reading, speaking of new and old, I've been reading a version of Homer's Iliad by Alice Oswald called Memorial. I think it's an amazing poem that... It's about death. It's a poem about all the death scenes in the Iliad, but it's beautiful. And it has these similes that just arrest you. That's homework.
That's great. Very good.
It has nothing to do with this. But.
No, we like homework. We like to be challenged. Can you ask your father that same kind of question, how he views the way we tend to fear what we don't understand and how we can maybe change that, how we can, frankly, raise children to not necessarily fear if you don't know, but to embrace and to be excited and to want to learn more. What does he think about that?
الخوف من المجهول هو قرأ هلأ إيميل من مستمع قال إنه دائما نسمع عن اللغة العربية بسياق العنف والقتل هلأ سمع القصيدة وعجبه تأثر بجمال اللغة فسؤاله برأيك كيف ممكن نتعلم أو نعلم أولادنا ما يخافوا من الأشياء الجديدة المجهولة
مشكلتنا نحن في العالم العربي يعني هنالك مشكلة أن كل الثقافة في عالمنا العربي تقوم على بنية دينية ومن خلال هذه البنية ينشأ التعصب أنا في رأيي الحل التعصب الديني يعني أنا في رأيي أن الحل عند لكي نعطي أملا للأجيال القادمة هي أن نعمل على نشر ثقافة نقيضة للتعصب يعني علينا أن نلغي هذا التعصب الذي هو سبب كل مشاكلنا لا أدري
بس هو عم بشي يحكي بشكل عام الخوف من المجهول بشكل عام مش بال
الخوف من المجهول
من الأشياء الجديدة مثلا الترجمة هي بتقدم شيء جديد غير معروف لقارئ بالإنجليزي
ولكن ما علاقة الترجمة بالخوف من المجهول
يعني الأدب العربي جديد ومجهول بالإنجليزي
يعني الأدب العربي يعاني من مشاكل كثيرة، هو مجهول حتى بالنسبة إلى العرب أنفسهم. يعني العلاقة بين الأدب العربي والعرب أصبحت شبه مفقودة. علينا أن نعيد إلى الأدب حضوره، والترجمة هنا تلعب دورا، طبعا تلعب دورا في التعريف بهذا الأدب لدى القارئين بلغات أخرى، بلغات أجنبية، وهذا هو المطلوب. يعني
I might have not translated your question well, but
that's okay.
The two answers he gave, the first one went back to that idea of fundamentalism, that we need to, in the Arab world at least, we need to foster a culture of understanding that goes beyond restrictions and categorizations and us and them. And that's a problem in the Arab world. He thinks the solution to it is a more open and more empathetic education, especially when it comes to raising our children. And then I asked again about translation and how maybe Arabic literature is an unknown that translation introduces. He says that at some point Arabic literature is an unknown to the Arabs themselves. So there's a need to reconnect with our literatures and our traditions. And beyond the same culture, translation is a necessary avenue for that.
أضيف شيئاً. عفواً، أريد أن أضيف شيئاً، هو أن الخوف من المجهول أمر جيد، ويجب أن يبقى هنالك خوف من المجهول. والمجهول جميل لأننا نخاف منه. لا بأس أن يكون هنالك بعض الخوف من المجهول.
Finally, he said, fearing the unknown is beautiful, and the unknown is beautiful because we fear it. So maybe fear is not always a bad thing.
Okay. Well, we got a few minutes left with our guest. You're hearing Jodat Fakhreddin, the author of Lighthouse for the Drowning, among other works, and that's a collection of poems translated by his daughter, who's with us, Huda Fakhreddin. She's also a professor of Arabic literature at the University of Pennsylvania. And Jodat and Huda are in Rochester as guests of BOA Editions. Peter Connors is here as the publisher for BOA Editions. BOA has an event tonight from 6 to 9 at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, and that's going to feature bilingual poetry reading, a book signing, dinner reception, silent auction. And this is their first Dine and Rhyme event featuring an international poet. It's going to be a wonderful evening, as you can hear just from what Jodat and Huda are bringing to you on this program here. And before we lose the hour, Peter, I want to ask you, how do you feel about, you know, the age 40? What's wrong with 40?
Oh, how do I feel about the age 40? I miss it since I'm 47 now, so I guess I'm whimsical for the age 40.
how did you feel when you were like maybe 39?
On the verge. What I'd really love to hear a fantastic poem about turning 40.
Well, see, and that's the thing. So maybe this was the self-indulgent part of me in reading through these works collected in Lighthouse for the Drowning, which you can get tonight, by the way, at that event, there's a poem about 40. And I would just ask Huda and Jodat to read it to us, and we'll just talk about some of the themes here.
Okay, 40.
Al-Arba'un. Ayu na'in likay atma'inna. وأرتضي الموت منحدرا من سماوات خوفي رفيقا وقد يتعثر مثلي هي الأربعون وقفت على شرفة الأربعين وأطلقت عيني فارتدتا لم أرى الماء لم أرى إلا ثقوب الزمان التي كفرت بالمياه تراءت لعيني سوداء هائلة كالقبور التي انبثقت في الفضاء البعيد ترى أي ناع لكي أطمئن ولكن أيلقي الفتى أذنا للنعي أيمشي إلى الموت مسترقا سمعه كيف يمشي إلى موته والمنادون ماتوا أيسمع من حوله منفة أين ولى المنادون أي بلاد لكي أطمئن لأمضي بعض الهنيهات مقتنسا لذتي في حماها ولولا ثلاث وليست ثلاثا لكي أدعيها وقفت على شرفة الأربعين على قمة العمر لم أرى وجه الحياة وأبصرت هول المسير إلى الموت وحدي ترى كيف يمشي الفتى مرة كنت ألهو بأن أتطلع نحو الغمام فأبصرت رسم جواد أصيل وقلت إذا قد وجدت سبيلي إلى النوم حين يؤرقني السير في الأرض لكنني من زمان بعيد فقدت الغمام فقدت جوادي ولهوي ترى لم يكن لي لهو سوى مرة واحدة ولو شاء ربي كنت قيس بن خالد ولو شاء ربي كنت عمرو بن مرثدي ولكنني ها هنا الآن ها ذا أنا قد وقفت على شرفة الأربعين ولو شاء ربي لقدر لي ناعيا كيف أمضي بما أنا أهل له كيف أمضي ولم أبتدئ لم يكن لي لهو ولو مرة واحدة وقفت على شرفة الأربعين على قمة العمر لم أرى وجه الحياة من الشرفة العالية أي ناع أليس سوى وحشة ناعية هل وقفت على شرفة قبل أين المنادون والحي أين الفتى لا أرى غير ظلي يذوب على زرقة نائية.
Now, we're down to our last 2 minutes here, so go ahead, Huda, and do your best here, and we'll...
I won't read the whole poem.
If you want an excerpt for me.
Yes. 40. If I die, lament me with what I deserve, is the quotation. Which mourner, so I might rest and accept death descending from the heavens of my fear, a friend, hesitant as I stand on the verge of 40, releasing my vision, yet it turns. I see no water but the dry holes of time gaping in black as graves opening in the distance. I wonder, where is the mourner so I might rest? Does a brave hear his own mourning? Does he walk to death eavesdropping? How does he walk to death if the guiding voices have died? Where have the mourners gone? I stand at the verge of 40 on the peak of years. I don't see the face of life from this balcony. I hear no mourners, only the moaning of my loneliness. Have I not stood on this balcony before? Where are my people and my guides? Where is the brave? I see only my shadow fading into the distant blue.
You see, Huda, I felt about 40 like I've gained all this wisdom. There's great things ahead. Not exactly the
sentiment here.
Yes, it's beautiful. Just some final thoughts from you on what where you take the meaning of 40.
Well, I'm not 40 yet.
No. I'm talking about the poem, though.
Yes, no, I know. I understand. No, I think this is a poem that, to me, the speaker in it stands outside of himself and sees himself aging, but also sees himself at the peak of life and compares expectations. It's a poem about aging and compromising. What you thought you would be at 40 and what you actually are.
Yeah, I think in some ways really shakes you. And so many of the works here will make you feel something, make you think. Lighthouse for the Drowning is the collection and just a small bit of Jodat Fakhreddin's amazing career and work. And tonight, 6 to 9 at the Rochester Academy of Medicine, you can meet Jodat, his daughter Huda, Peter Connors from BOA. Peter, thanks for putting this together, and thanks for giving us a wonderful enrichment of ideas and learning here on a Friday. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for making a space for us today.
And Jodat, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Wonderful. And Huda, our absolute honor to have you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Wonderful. Short break. More Connections coming up.